What are we doing here right now?
We're going to be doing some t-shirt giveaways.
We're still giving shit away.
Yeah, we like to do that.
Giveaways here and there.
This is the most upside down business model I've ever seen in my life.
I know one of these days we'll start making some money.
Doug, as I say, Doug hasn't given me any. I've been here for over a year. Doug hasn't given me any fucking money, but we keep giving shirts out to people.
we gotta finance them somehow.
By the way, have you seen Doug's new car?
It's made out of t-shirts.
You got that new Tesla. He'll fucking we all want it, right?
Are you sure it's that or is his sailboat?
It runs on. Yeah.
He made out of t-shirts.
Keep wondering. I feel like they give a motherfucker from Office Space with a red stapler, like just having me work here and not paying me a paycheck. I just assume that I'm going to get paid sooner or later.
Good faith.
I'm in charge of the mics.
All right, let's give some shirts away.
Yeah, we had 9 reviews this last week. A little better.
So give away one.
We're giving away 3.
What?
Whoa.
Yeah, you know.
Coming in from the side.
We have a choice here. It's either pay you or give away t-shirts.
Oh, yeah.
Let's give them t-shirts.
Why not?
We're building goodwill here.
Listen, the shirts don't cost much. We get them made by child labor overseas. It's all
well, good. If Doug keeps this up, I'm going to start.
Just
we're
kidding.
Gonna, it's good. I'm going to start having to ask PR for money just straight up. Like, hey, if you guys want to donate and help Adam out, because he's still trying to work over here. All right, give him away, Doug.
All right. Katie Lee, 13. Justin Height, Art. And we have one more. Rob G, 56.
All free t-shirts.
Yes.
You got to email Doug where?
At mindpumpradio@gmail.com. Send over your size, your iTunes name, and your address.
Yeah.
And that's it.
We got you.
You
that's
won.
That's all.
Write a creepy message to Doug, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Justin.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
You know what I had earlier before I ate my 85% lean, 15% grass-fed beef, which was probably, I don't know, probably had a good 50 grams of fat in that. I got a can of coconut milk, full fat, threw it in a fucking bullet, not the sex toy, the blender, Adam. Yeah. Added some cinnamon, some stevia, and some vanilla extract, and just pounded that, bro. That's like 65 grams of fat, I think.
No protein, though, in it, though, yeah?
No.
How low is your protein intake right now?
I'm probably like 100 and... Let's see. Probably 140.
Dude, just for shits and giggles for once, could you download Fat Secret app and just load your food so you could see?
Huh? Yeah. Sorry, I wasn't paying attention.
He doesn't like technology.
I was too busy looking at my bicep.
Bro. Yeah, he like refuses. Yeah. He like refuses to like count for...
You know why?
He thinks about like flyers when we're thinking, you know, in this day and age, it's websites. You know what I mean? No, websites, fuck.
Listen.
It's about flyers, bro.
What is this interwebs? Yeah. Listen, you guys know me. What do you think will happen if I start tracking shit?
You'll get anal. I'll
bro,
think that
it'll get stupid.
You'll advance into like this superhuman robot guy.
New level,
it's
bro.
It's going to be crazy.
Wait.
New level.
Wait, what will I be? Justin?
Superhuman robot guy.
Oh, fuck. I'm doing it tomorrow.
Cyborg.
See? I'm doing it tomorrow.
It'll be, yeah.
Hey, I mean, guys.
You'll definitely be Johnny Five.
No, I don't want to enter my food. I have a very healthy relationship with food now. I know what I should eat. I know how to monitor
it. It doesn't make you unhealthy. Here's the reason why I want you to do it. I'm just curious because I want to be able to ask
you. I'll add it up for you.
I want to be able to ask you a question and kind of get an idea what you are and your percentage are because you think you throw numbers out.
I've gone and added things
up. Yeah, well, okay. Because as I say, whenever I think I'm like right on track and then I am put it, I'm normally not. Even to this day, as much as I've tracked, because I'm sure I've tracked more than anybody in this room, unless I track, I'm still off. You know,
so what you're saying,
you like that one more than my Fitness Pal.
It's just I've
you
got
use, like the UI better.
Yeah, it's very user friendly to me. And then I for clients to screenshot the My Fitness Pal when they screen.
That's what it is.
Yeah,
okay, I
yeah,
gotcha.
It's yeah. definitely.
So what you're saying is, if I start counting because I could be off, like you said, that I could get buffer. It's possible.
Buff-dinous? Possible for you to get buffed.
Is that possible?
Yeah. This Beautiful. Whole time you thought you reached your genetic potential, and little did you know.
Because I'm like, there's
you
no
were,
possible
you haven't used
way.
Technology. You were 7 grams of protein and 8 grams of fat off this entire time.
Oh, shit. Son of a
little
bitch.
Tweaks.
That's all you had to do, dude.
Hey, I got an opening song, dude.
What?
We're on.
Kick your head. Miss Locals, kick your face. Miss Locals, kick your balls into outer space.
What was that?
What is that from?
You know what reminded me of that? Was when I talked about Johnny Five.
Yeah. Oh, that was on
Bro. The, oh, that's
it's the gang. He joins this gang.
From Circuit, Short Circuit.
Short Circuit. Yeah, yeah. Oh, what a
throwing it back.
What a shitty old movie.
It was great.
Yeah. No, that wasn't shitty.
It was right in line with like Batteries Not Included.
I have an old one
for
you.
Oh my God, I forgot about that another one. Good one.
My little nephew was watching this, Cloak and Dagger. Do you remember Cloak and Dagger?
I never watched that.
1983.
I never watched that.
83?
Was that a cartoon?
Or 85?
All right, here, real quick. Name like a favorite like movie from when you were a kid that's a little obscure.
Rad.
I never saw it.
Labyrinth.
Damn, that was fast. Both of you guys.
Rad. I loved Rad.
Dude, I
never saw that
spinning sequence with the bike. He's like doing a handstand.
Bro.
And then it's like playing that music. Like,
can we all just watch
that? Send me an angel.
Yes, bro. Yes.
Send me an angel.
Okay, so
it's
about right like freestyle now. Bike riders, right?
No wonder I didn't watch it.
You weren't into, you didn't, that's right, I forgot you weren't athletic.
He doesn't like to move.
When I was growing up, like, Haro, GT, Mongoose, like, having like a bike.
Oh, I had
like
a freestyle bike, bro. Electric green, white pigs.
Yes. That's that was like the GT right there.
Yeah.
Dude, those bikes when we were kids in the early 80s was like the shit. Anybody who had that, like.
Well, that's back when there's no helmet. Yeah. You don't wear shit. You go up in the hill and you ride down head first. And,
No. We used to build ramps and take pictures with our, flash camera of us doing jumps and stuff. And that movie was like that was the movie back then in the early 80s.
Yeah, I never watched that.
I remember because we had this Flamingo video. It was around the corner from my house, and I must have rented that Flamingo video from that place at least 100 times.
What's a Flamingo video?
That's just the name of the
name of the place.
Yeah, yeah.
Did they have the room in the back? Oh, with the fucking dirty movies.
Yes. That was how it used to be
back in the
dirty
day.
Dirty movies and UFC
before Blockbuster came in.
Yeah, you had to go through the curtain.
Ultimate cage fighting and
how
porn.
About watch?
Let me put it this way: how desperate were men back in the day that they would go to a fucking place where normal people are looking at normal movies and go in the fucking porn room and everybody knows where you're going?
I'll do you one up from that. In Doug's day, they used to have to go to the theater. They didn't even have it out on
VHS.
Who
the fuck watches porn in a theater?
Yeah.
That's how you used to have
think about that.
Bro, that's
before video cassette. Yeah. That's how you had to.
And then
go.
They jerk off in the theater?
You got to leave at least two seats. Room.
Doug, have you been in one of those?
It gets... Yeah. Never have, actually.
Do you ever remember seeing them when you were younger?
I remember, the old porn theaters.
Oh, you do remember?
Oh, that. We had one downtown where I lived.
Were they talkies?
As far as I know, I don't. I actually never went to one.
Never crossed your mind.
I'd heard stories about what some people popcorn. Did there, so I wasn't that interested.
Does anybody remember their first porn they watched?
My first? Oh, that's a good...
How about that one?
That's a good one. I got a story.
I don't know, but God, it was very hairy though.
Let me tell you one thing I hate about stories.
Let's hear your story.
Here's what I hate about Mind Pump. This is the one thing I hate about it, and you fuckers know. Like, I just will tell shit, and afterwards I'm like, why'd I fucking tell that? It didn't stop me.
Here it comes.
Yeah. So
no pun intended.
So I had a couple porns, and I can't remember what they were, but they were basically your gonzo, like multiple scene type
gonzo.
Thing. They weren't like, it wasn't like a movie. It was like scenes of just, you know what I mean? Yeah. It was basically the most bang you get for your buck. So I had two of those things and we were having a family party at my cousin's house and he lives maybe around the block. And so all me and my cousins are there, right? So we're all hanging out. We're like, yeah, we're going to go outside and fucking, you know, we're all going to like play hide and seek and run and shit. We're like 13. And, I'm like, guys, I'm like, let's fucking walk to my house. I got two fucking porns we're going to watch.
And they're awesome.
So we get to my house. I put them in. We're watching them. And I hear the front door unlock. Like someone was unlocking the front door, right?
And it's in the TV.
No. Someone's coming in the front door. So I'm like, oh, shit. So everybody's kind of panicking. So you remember the old VHS machines? When you push the button to eject, that motherfucker would take 15 seconds to shoot out of the movie. And then it comes up as a... Yeah. So I push eject, and that thing's like...
I'm going to guess you probably pressed it like 20 times.
By the time it comes out, I grab it, I pull it out, I turn around, and my mom is standing right there, bro. So I fucking take the movie, and I throw
Debbie
it under the couch.
Anal.
I throw it under the couch, and she's like, what'd you throw under the couch? I'm like, I can't get up. I hurt my back. I'm trying to like deflect it.
I can't get up. Bro, I hurt my back.
I hurt my back. She's like, get up. I want to see what's under the. I'm like, no, I can't. I hurt my back. So I'm doing this like charade for like 10 minutes. My cousins are all sitting there fucking awkward as shit. Finally, she blasts me.
Their boners.
Finally, she blasts me. She's like, don't lie to me. Stand up. So I stand up and I grab the movie underneath the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I fucking smash it with my hands because I don't. Because she was gonna put it in the VHS. She's gonna put it in the VCR.
You no, break the VHS.
Dude, you broke the porn.
Bro, I don't want my mom to like push play and then that shit appear.
Wow. She can't read the label.
Bro, it's one thing to read the label. It's another thing to see the filthiest shit you've ever seen in your life. This wasn't a normal porn. It wasn't like, oh, look at the boobs. It was stuff that I won't even repeat on Mind Pump.
Yeah.
Horrible stuff. Yeah. So anyway.
Like donkey shit.
I don't remember
clowns.
The name of mine, although I do remember I told the story of my mom strung it out and I came home. She had found it, you know, because when you, I think it was like, God, let's see.
Pulled all the tape out.
Yes. Yeah. It was a 3-hour one. You know, it cost me like 50 something, 60 bucks for it. I saved up all summer for it.
You sure?
I did.
All summer working
at
yours.
I did. You know,
squeezing udders.
No, that was even before that, dude. This is like $4 an hour right here.
This was when the market.
Yeah. Burger King then.
Porn wasn't accessible, man. And you're a fucking young dude. Like,
oh yeah.
That shit gets valuable.
It's supply and demand.
I don't even remember how I got
it. You don't have to explain it to me.
How I got it. I think it was such a big ordeal too because we were like 16 years old, so we were underage buying it. It was like trying to find the place that would sell it to you. We finally found a place, and and then I got it, and then I, you know, you take it, I think I put it like in the Back to the Future case, you know. So it was like Back to the Future
classic.
Yeah, Back to the Future part one. My mom's there.
Marty McFly.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh shit.
Well, I had a TV. And a VCR in my room, so it was, I kept it underneath my TV in the Back to the Future case, and just for some reason my mom was going through videos in my room and pulled it out and must have seen it. And then I came home from school and I hadn't seen her yet. I just go straight to my room, and when I walk in my room, there's this video cassette. So imagine 3 hours of video cassette. That's a lot of tape. It's completely strung out all over my bed. It's like this mound of tape. Man. And I go,
Did you slowly go in there and like wind up the thing to try?
I was like,
I have to save it.
Oh shit!
How long did you have it before she found it?
I got a good 6 months in.
Okay.
6 months.
That's what I was wondering.
I'm pretty sure I watched it all the way through at least 4 or 5 times.
That's what I'm saying. At least you got your money's worth.
Well, as a kid,
sure, it was a couple times.
I don't know if I got my money's worth, because as a kid, that was like all summer long to save up to buy it, right? Because you don't make hardly any money.
You had to go back to using your imagination.
Yeah, yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah, I know. But my sister couldn't wait to see me in trouble. She like rushed in my room and she said, "Mom wants to see you." You know, I was like, "Oh shit!" Hands down. Most awkward conversation to this day, 34 years of my life, that I have ever had in my life. That talking to your mom, and then,
same here.
And I grew up in a home where, so my father passed when I was 7. So, you know, the my mom didn't really understand. And my mom was very young. She had me, she was pregnant with me at 19 years old, had me at 20. And, you know, she didn't think that masturbation was a normal thing for a young teenage boy. And boy, made that awkward.
It's the most normal thing for
Yeah. You know, and I think my mom knows now and looks back, like probably feels bad. But, you know, then it was like this, you know, we were like contemplating taking me to like counseling and shit. It's like,
wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Our son's hurting himself.
Wouldn't that have been funny though? I get to my first counseling session.
He's choking himself.
And the counselor looks
on his dick.
What was he doing? He was masturbating. What's the problem here?
Yeah. Did he use glue? Like, what did he do?
Was he waving it in front of kids? What was he doing?
Yeah. My mom, cause we talked about this in previous old episodes, and my mom listens to Mind Pump. So then my mom, like, while I was having dinner the other night, she's like, do you remember that time when I found those porn magazines and we had that cover? I'm like, no, fuck.
Let's not talk about this.
I'm like, I don't want to hear this shit from you. Weird.
Oh, I just remembered a crazy story. So, I had this cousin. I don't know if you guys have had a cousin or
I do have a cousin.
Yeah, a family member who's like this, who comes over and they always want to try on all your clothes or borrow shirts or borrow stuff if you were similar size. My cousin and I, when we were growing up, were very similar size. So he would come over as soon as he came to my house, first thing he like beeline straight to my room, trying on all my clothes and stuff. And he would just do it like without even asking, just do it, just go in there and start trying clothes on. And he'd come out and he'd always wear it. It'd always be my favorite shirt or a brand new shirt that I've only wore like one time. And he'd come out and be like, "Oh, I need to borrow a shirt. I'm going to wear this." And I'd be like, "Come on, guy." You know, and it used to piss me off. He used to do that all the time. I'll never forget this time. So I had this, and I had this shirt for years. It was a Nike red old school Nike shirt that I turned into a cutoff, and it was like my gym shirt. I always wore it to the gym. Well, and I knew he liked that shirt. Well, I'm showering at the time, and it's him and my buddy, and we're getting ready to all go to the gym. Ironically, the gym that I tagged you guys in that I said we saw the girl, right? So we're getting ready to get to the gym. I come out, And sure as shit, he's wearing my cutoff. But he picked it up off the floor.
Oh, no. Well,
he puts the cutoff on.
No.
And up here on the left-hand corner, it's got a little Adam mark. It's crumpled all up and dried up. And I fucking fall over on the ground. And I just start rolling and laughing. And it was the best redemption I had ever had of my cousin wearing my shit. And I go, hey, bro.
Kind of like glue.
Go look in the mirror real quick and take a look at that shirt. Since you picked it up off my floor next to my bed, he goes over and he comes screaming, ripping it off of him and stuff. I said, that'll serve you, bro. Get him into my room and just put my clothes on without asking.
He's like, you put too much starch on this.
Oh, dude, best ever. Best ever.
Yeah. Well, man, that's a great story to segue into the next segment of our show, the fitness portion.
Fast forward through all the bro shit into
my
the
quadriceps are sore.
It's time for the quad.
What did you say?
Quad.
The quad.
The what?
The quad.
The what?
The quad.
It's today.
Yes, it is.
It's motherfucking quad.
It is.
That's what time it is.
It's too many bad words, Adam. Oh, anyway,
sorry. Lots of bad words.
Let's keep it going.
All right, Firewood 53 is asking you guys to address the over 40 and 50 crowd.
So this would be like son's age, or Doug's son's age right here at 40.
What?
Doug's 80, his son's 40.
Oh, okay.
Or almost. What are you, 36 now? 37?
I just turned 37.
37.
I did. Isn't that awesome?
That is almost 40.
So address the 40 and 50 crowd. Well, almost every client around that age, I actually recommend to them right away to get their blood work done and have them check out their hormonal levels right away. In the past, I used to not do that. I didn't know much about that. I didn't realize how important that was. And, you know, through my years and years of training and lots of men in their 40 and 50s, a lot of them, because of poor eating, lack of exercise, or, you know, supplements that they've taken over the past, or maybe even the possible usage of steroids when they were younger, have now got hormonal issues as they get older. And I just want to know where I'm at with a client so I can explain to them why they may be having a hard time building mass, and also if they're open-minded enough to possibly see a therapist for that if they need it.
Well, I think
if we can address it naturally first.
I think if all things being equal, we're talking about a healthy over 40, over 50 client. So yeah.
What
healthy, everything's equal.
What percentage healthy. Is that? Just by the way.
Well, I mean, well, of course they're gonna have more issue, but what I mean by healthy is I don't mean ideal health. I mean like, you know, medically, like they go to the hospital, they go to the doctor, they get tested, and they, you know, they might have a minor issue, but they don't have major issues. So.
Yeah.
So for those of you that are kind of normal, don't have any of those issues, but want to start exercising, really the same that rules that apply to a 20-year-old who exercises apply to you. The difference is a 20-year-old can get away with doing stupid shit more often.
Great point.
But the same rules apply. You want
to
train.
There might be a lot more imbalances now to deal with that you didn't address back then.
Right, but you know, train yourself, focus on the big, you know, core lifts, train your whole body, you know, 2 or 3 days a week instead of following a body part split. Make sure you have a plan with your training. This is one of the reasons why we created you know, our program, you know, MAPS Anabolic, is because it follows those principles, but it's a plan. It breaks it down and you look at it, you follow it, you can see the videos of demos. Mm-hmm. I would say just listen to your body. I think especially if you were an athlete in your 20s or, you know, teens, you have a skewed view and image of what your body can take and what the right amount of intensity is. And I've had this happen many times with someone who's like, I played soccer in college, or I played basketball in high school.
Yeah.
They remember that. And so then they come in, they're 50 years old, they go to work out, and they want to hammer themselves like they did before. They remember what they could do before. And I'm sorry. First of all, it has less to do with age than it does with inactivity.
Yeah.
Honestly, if you're active and you do a really good job with your workouts, your performance won't drop for a while. I mean, you lose agility fit first. Mm-hmm. And strength is the last thing you lose. I mean, you see some guys in the gym who train consistently. And
have you ever heard of old man strength?
Old man strength.
Yeah. You know, those guys, the guy
they're
that
more tapped in their central nervous system, I feel.
I'd say for the average guy working out, you know, they'll have great performance all the way up into their 60.
Yeah.
But it's really that lack of activity you've had that applies to anybody who comes in as total, you know, totally deconditioned.
I think, and two, for as far as like the older crowd, like I definitely like to address like flexibility and quality of movement. That's like the first thing that I'm, you know, in tune with. If they're anything older than me, you know, or as old as me, like that's something that I know has diminishing returns as you're sitting down constantly. Now your whole environment has changed from even just being in school. Because now we get into our careers, we get into, you know, the focus of kids or all these distractions, all these different things. It leads into different postural things that happen. And you don't realize it, but the patterning of like day-to-day activities that you don't do or just, you know, the way that you're forming into these positions is something that is definitely going to affect you. And now I address that first thing. That's the first thing that you're going to get benefit from.
Yeah, that's 100% correct because you're looking at probably the top two things are going to be imbalances because they're older. They've been moving in a particular way or not moving in a particular way for a long time. And the second thing is you don't heal quite as quickly if you injure yourself or tweak something or twist mm-hmm. something. So you just don't get away with as much.
Well, I feel the need to echo what Justin was saying too, because I feel like Sal is talking about Dougs. And I think Dougs are rare to come by.
Yeah.
Somebody who is, you know, into his 40s, and is already a pretty self-aware guy, a pretty smart guy, was well-read and researched a lot on his own first, and then he gets to meet someone like Sal who takes him to a whole nother level. I think a Doug is very, very rare to find. And when I got those clients, they were great. Most of them are more like what Justin's saying is, you know, we're dealing with all kinds of mobility issues more than anything else. And so I take something like, okay, squat, deadlift, bench press. And I know at least 80 to 90% of those 40 to 50s plus have an issue with one of those three. They can't do without some sort of pain. And standing overhead press. Those four movements, our goal is to be able to perform that pain-free and with good form. And that, and to me, getting you to that point through flexibility, mobility, functionality, learning how to do that first, which is very hard to do for a 40 to 50-year-old man. Because with most men, including we're all victims of this, guys, is we allow our egos to get in the way, and that we're testosterone driven. We get in the gym and we're ready to hit the iron, and nobody wants to walk over, grab the silver dumbbells and start, you know, doing light ass work that's really, it makes you feel like you're a wuss. But I tell you what, this was something that I talked a lot about on my YouTube channel when I did my whole journey from fat to fit. And I explain, you know, one of the hardest things to do is to check my ego at the door, come in. My workout may only be 30 minutes, low intensity, but it's all about form and technique and getting down everything, that learning to move properly again. And then I'm going to progress all those movements.
Well, so. Right. But you know, what I meant by the rules apply is that if you have anybody who comes in with imbalances, you need to follow that.
Yes,
that pattern.
But it's more prevalent in somebody who's 40.
Much more, of course.
And I think when somebody, because I have guys, this is not the first time that somebody 40, 50 range has asked for us to talk about this age group. And I know, I don't know for sure who this guy is, but I know the last person who asked, I did know them. And I know that he had back surgery, he's had knee stuff, he's had all these issues. And so I think what he was looking for us to say was, well, you know, avoid exercises like deadlifting and maybe focus on this, but you're never going to hear from us. I don't give a fuck if you had back surgery last year or not. If you can sit down on a toilet, like Justin said, we should be able to squat.
Yeah, or at least work towards that.
Well, that's your goal. Yeah. Your goal becomes, it's not about, can I squat 145, 225, whatever the number is. It is, can I squat properly with good form, comfortably, and not hurt myself? And if I can't, getting myself to where I can.
Yeah.
So that becomes a priority, and kids can get away more with it not being a priority, just getting there and doing it.
And having strength and maintaining strength is pain preventative, right? So that's something that, like, I make sure, like, I'm testing the way that the body's moving and seeing where, you know, all the interruptions are they need to address. But really, I'm trying to get you strong. So that way, when you get into, like, you know, your 80s, you know, and all the, like, you're strong enough to where it's like you can still move well, and you're not going to have those aches, pains, arthritis, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's like the first sort of wave, I feel, as far as like your mentality needs to shift, and you need to start even being more focused on, like, being ahead of that. You know, staying and maintaining this healthy lifestyle even, you know, with more intensity.
You know, it's interesting. It was only a couple generations ago that the pain that people felt in their body when they got to 50, 60 and older was due to activity. It was due to repetitive, hard labor activity.
Yeah.
Today, pain comes from inactivity.
The opposite.
It's completely the opposite. It's all from inactivity.
It's very true.
It has. It's not like, hey, why is your back hurt? Oh, you know, I break rocks, you know, 12 hours a day. No, it's, I sit at a desk all day long. So it's the fix is completely different. And in this case, like Justin's saying, like, you know, the goal is to be able to move properly in these core movements and to continue moving that way. And you'll be blown away by how much you'll separate yourself from your peers.
Yeah.
You will blow yourself the fuck away. You'll be a 67-year-old person who is completely mobile, not just completely mobile, but, I mean, you'd be able to match the average 30-year-old, no problem. And meanwhile, your peers are falling down, they're hurting themselves, they're sick, they can't sleep, whatever.
Watch how fast somebody with super protracted shoulders and hunched kind of positioning deteriorates right in front of your eyes.
Oh, very quickly.
Watch how fast that happens.
That is such a good point. And it's crazy because, and I used to, this was like a huge selling point for me to clients, was I used to stand up with just a slight protracted shoulder to show people. And I'd say, this is your 20s. This is your, and I just keep rolling it a little bit for 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. And then in 70s, I would emulate somebody bending over with a walker. And said, that is the evolution of what you have going on right now. And you may not think that it's a big deal right now, but I tell you what, 30 years from now, if you don't learn how to figure out what we're talking about right now and how to fix it, address it, then that's where you're heading, and you're going to be really
Not resisting gravity.
Yeah. And I tell you right now, when you're there trying to go the other direction, it's a hell of a lot harder than being aware of it now and starting to
I heard the greatest analogy today. One of my clients actually told me it. You know, if you have two lines that are running parallel, right? And you take one line, and all you do with that one line is you move it 1 degree away from the other line. For a while, they're going to kind of look equal.
Oh, that's a
but
great
over
analogy.
Time, those lines are going to be very, very far apart.
Miles apart.
And this is what happens when you're active as you age.
Yeah.
The difference between you and your peers becomes bigger. And when you're 20 and you're fit, your average 20-year-old compared to you, it's not a huge difference. It's a difference. It's not a huge difference, though. When you're 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, that becomes... You're like a completely different human. You're like not even the same category anymore by the time you get to that.
Oh, I feel like right now, I mean, we probably just now are starting to really notice
I'm seeing it now.
In our mid-30s.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, being in our mid to late 30s now, looking at our friends that were my peers, we all looked about the same fitness-wise. Maybe I was a little bit fitter because I was a trainer, but not much. You know what I'm saying? Not enough for my friends to care. To now, to looking at everybody and be seeing how out of shape and deconditioned everybody is. It's like, it's already starting. And I can't imagine 40s and 50s because I ain't slowing down. I mean, to me, I'm better this year than I was last year and the year before. For me, I'm still feel like I haven't reached my genetic potential and I'm continuing to press that. So, you know, I feel like I'm getting better with age where I'm watching all my peers get worse and worse. And it's starting to get bad now. You see it already.
Yep.
Crap.
Next question is from Steven 1234. He's asking, if you suffer from chronic aches, is it better to take time off or to keep going to the gym with less intensity?
Okay, so this was actually This was a longer question. Basically, he's asking if, like, you know, if you're sore, if you're achy, what's a better option to accelerate your recovery or make yourself feel better? Completely taking time off or going in and working out with a lower intensity? I just said it earlier when we were talking about how people back in the day, their pain was due to overactivity. Well, today, that's not the case. And there's different kinds of ache that you want to think about. First of all, if you have an injury, then you take time off. If you hurt yourself and I have a swollen knee or twisted ankle, whatever, that's when you take the time off to let it heal. If you're sore or achy because you worked out hard or because your body needs to recover a little faster, activity actually will speed up and facilitate recovery. So, or if you're achy because of a muscle imbalance, you don't take time off. You go in there and correct the imbalance. Yeah. You know, like if I have, you know, shoulder impingement issues, then I can either rest so my shoulder feels better, or I can go in the gym and focus on correcting the imbalance in my shoulder so that I don't get impingement anymore. One is going to relieve pain temporarily, plus I'm going to get out of shape. The other one's going to relieve pain permanently, and I'm going to maintain my level of fitness. So 9 out of 10 times, unless you're like lacking sleep, like you should never exercise in lieu of sleep.
Well,
like,
I was just going to interrupt and tell you that I think the first is, and this is what I love about these gentlemen in the room with me. We all, and I feel like we all kind of do it. We were just talking about me earlier about some stuff that I'm feeling and aching and this and that. Is I start to assess everything first, you know, what's going on with my stress levels, what's going on with my diet, you know, assess all that first. And I try and figure out, okay, it has something to do with maybe an outside thing that's causing this. once I figure out that and pinpoint it to what exactly it is, then I think we go after it. And like Sal was saying, if it's muscle soreness, absolutely, you know, going to work out is the best thing you could do. It's just, you just need to learn to bring down the intensity. Like Sal was saying, you promote recovery. Well, the way you promote recovery is you're going to increase your oxygen, increase the blood flow, more blood flow to those muscles that are sore means more nutrients, means faster recovery, versus the opposite, which is being sedentary, not working those muscles. Yeah, recovery is still going to happen and stuff like that with that muscle, but you're not promoting it to be faster by going in and actually.
Not only that, but you may be losing the adaptation signal. I mean, if we're just talking about muscle soreness, okay, if I worked out real hard yesterday and I did heavy sets of squats and my legs are really sore, and legs are a weakness of mine and I really want to focus on them, I'll go in the next day, even though I'm sore, and do really light shit, light, low-intensity stuff. This may be the time when I use machines, where I'll go in and do leg extensions and stuff that I know is not going to damage my muscles too much, but get things to kind of move and get a pump. What that does is actually speeds up recovery, but besides that, you build more muscle doing that as well because you continue to send this anabolic signal. This is actually the philosophy behind the trigger session concept in MAPS Anabolic, and you know, our focus session, which we'll talk about
right
much later,
and then our mobility session, which exactly I was gonna talk about. But yeah,
no, it's a no brainer that you want, if it's a soreness thing, you want to get in there and move it. But the thing you have to learn to do is to take it down. You know, you don't need, if you're sore in your legs, so
pick exercises that are going to be conducive to recovery. Like, you might not want to go in and squat again.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
So what I typically do, I was going to use legs as an example because I squat damn near every other day, if not every day, and or do train legs. So if I just did yesterday, I did a heavy squat day. Well, I'm feeling a little sore, so tomorrow when I go in, I'll probably start my workout, which is some body weight walking lunges. I'll just do walking lunges and I'll really focus on stretching my strides out and just my body weight. Maybe I'll throw 30 pounds or 40 pounds on my back. Nothing really heavy. All I'm really trying to do is like promote recovery. And I'm not even though I could do a lot more weight on my back and do that, that's not the idea. I'm trying to allow my body still to recover, and I'm not trying to tear and break down.
And it's not a waste of time. You know what I mean? People think, I'm going to go to the gym and do this really easy workout because I'm sore. Well, I might as well not go. It's going to be a waste of time. Not true at all.
No.
Lots of benefits.
It charges you. Yeah, it promotes, you know, your energy levels to just spike for going back into your like intense days. And, you know, for me, I use it to really take that time that I wouldn't take before to improve my skills and also improve, you know, my overall quality of movement. And so I'll do things with the kettlebell where I'm doing like a Turkish get up. I'm doing these like interesting mobility flow patterns and these different things to open everything up and keep things communicating well. And so I actually get a lot more responsive going into do my regular compound lifts the following day. So it, you know, has proven itself to me already that it's you know, the value in that is something that I'm not just going to brush over.
No,
beautiful. Absolutely.
Billy Luckham is asking, how can you increase speed, acceleration, and agility for a sport like rugby?
Oh, that's right up your...
I actually played
right up
rugby.
Your
pant legs. Yeah, I played rugby for like 2 years, so it's a sport that... I love that sport. Man, that was a super high-intensity conditioning sport.
Which one's more brutal, rugby or football?
Football, you take the most damage.
Do
rugby,
you, really?
You take a lot of like... surface damage.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? Like I got a lot of cuts, bruises, and like I actually had a guy that like he had metal spikes and he stomped like a hole in my head, like on the side of my head of this little like divot.
What?
I was at the bottom of this scrum and this guy just like stomped on my head
my god, dude, a spike to
bro,
your skull.
It was brutal. It was brutal. Yeah, so maybe I take that back. Maybe rugby was worse.
Fuck that.
But
it kind of reminds me of like comparing MMA to boxing.
Yeah.
Right? Like boxing will do more brain damage to you because the repetitive of your brain bouncing off the back of your head, where MMA, you probably come out bloodier and messed up more often than not, but the long-term damage is probably less, right? Would you see it something like that?
Yeah, and the technique changes, you know. So for like for me, I took a lot more damage tackling in football because everybody's coming at you so much faster and with so much more force, and they're using everything else that they have. The thing about pads and helmets are those are now they learn how to use those against you. So it's like
having
a battering ram,
yeah,
you know? And so, you know, tackling rugby, like, it's totally different. Like, you try and absorb that impact.
Yeah, because you're conscious about hurting yourself.
You
right?
feel it immediately. Yeah. I used to hit with my chest and my shoulder, you know, and do like a form tackle, and then my head would hit and then roll to the side. And so I would tackle like that when I started playing rugby. And man, I just like almost knocked this guy out. And at the same time, I almost knocked myself out. I was just like, whoa, seeing stars. But it was a fun sport. But as far as like, what was the question again?
How do you increase speed, agility?
Yeah, speed, agility.
That's right.
Yeah.
So like, right this is why.
His,
yeah.
After he tells his concussion
I got so
story.
Into that. I just got so into that explanation of the sport. Yeah, that's why we created Maps Performance. I mean, Maps Performance, I take you through these different phases, these four phases. And what we're doing is we're working specifically on, you know, our central nervous system response, our power, our explosiveness. And we want to take these things as new skills, as new adaptations that we're really trying to get better at and then apply into the sport. And so we take that into that phase, and then we move on to proprioceptive work and reaction. And so now I'm getting a better body awareness and you know, I'm responding to movement way better because now I'm training the body in that specific adaptation to promote that. So you know, and then from there, you know, we go into our speed power. We go into like the power that you don't need a lot of load. You just have to generate it. And so if I need to generate that, I'm hoping that I built the strength in my legs, you know, to really promote that, because that's what's my ground forces. That's what's driving me into to get that snap, to get that movement on the field that like is going to set you apart from everybody else. And then, you know, after that, we get into conditioning. It's that durability. We get into just you know, the part where everybody expects, like it's a highly conditioned sport, rugby, and it's high intensity. And so these two things, it's a tough blend, but you have to learn how to adapt to that. And so you have to mirror that in the way that you train as far as endurance is concerned, so you can last that however long the game span is and be able to perform at your highest.
Well, I think the important thing, you know, that you explained, because you explained our program Mass Performance, but in a nutshell, you can hear how the reason why we program it that way is we focus on specific forms of performance for periods of time, mm-hmm. rather than training for all forms of performance all at the same time.
Right.
This is a key factor in excellent programming. Now, when you're in season, your training kind of changes a little bit, right? Now you're training to prevent injury.
Of course.
You're training to recover. But if you're getting ready for a season, you're best off phasing your workout so that, you know, at one point you're focusing on strength, on this time you're focusing on agility, and you're doing this over the course of 12 weeks or 14 weeks, leading you up to peak performance.
I'm glad you said that, because that's what I wanted to kind of echo, was that the biggest thing that's different about the program and the way you guys designed this was that, you know, it's phased out, and probably the biggest fuck up I see right now, and it's super common and it's growing more than it's shrinking right now, is college and, or not college, but like high school football teams and MMA fighters using CrossFit as their way of training.
About that in like
I was talking to my buddy Robbie the other day, who's
that's like the standard now for programming on the high school level.
Yeah,
really disappoints.
It's even at like the MMA level. That's what a lot of these guys.
Well, we got to be careful now, because just like CrossFit athletes don't follow the WOD. I wonder how many of them follow actual CrossFit, or for a lot of it has to do with branding. And then the second thing, when you're looking at high school football, it's not hard. I mean, just to give credit where credit's due, it is not hard to outperform what the fuck they were doing before.
So we'll bring my buddy Robbie on here, who this is coming from. So this is someone who directly trains some of the top athletes in MMA, and by top I mean like number one, like Cain Velasquez type guys and stuff. And is a part of AKA and their whole training program. And, you know, I'll let him come on here and get in real detail and share. But one of the things we talked about, and I didn't know this till he shared that with me, was, you know, I was telling him about the epidemic in the bodybuilding world and training and stuff like that, and what we've seen happen. And he was telling me what's going on in that. And I was just blown away. And he says, yeah, it's one of the most frustrating things when you're a trainer and you know what's best for this mixed martial artist that he should go over and he should focus just on this one modality and get better at it, then come over here and focus on this. Instead, they're doing this CrossFit type workout where they're just, you know, because they're working, because that's all of it all mixed together, and they feel like that's going to better them in all those verses, phasing it like we're supposed to. And that was the big thing that when we came out with performance, that was our answer. And we've talked, you know, earlier on, we've talked a lot of shit about CrossFit, and that's our, and we've also said there's a lot of things that we like about it. And there is a lot of positive things. The problem is the program design. And now that's what performance was about, was teaching people, if you want that kind of performance, do you want to perform like a CrossFit person or a rugby player, you want to perform at that elite level? Well, let me show you, or let us show you how to do that, but let us show you how to do it the right way.
Right, and really, in a nutshell, you phase your workouts, and then you tie it all together at the end.
That's it.
That's the way the body responds best.
And you can you can insert most sports along those lines. And so that's why we, you know, it's not athletic, not MAPS athletic. It's performance. It's a better way for you to perform. But you have to sort of dictate those types of movements, you know, and make sure that you're focused on improving the performance end of those movements. And so that changes from sports to sports.
Well, here's a shameless plug. So, you want help with doing that. You have someone like Justin who's done rugby before. You get performance, you get access to the forum, and then that's where you ask like questions on how to modify certain workouts, because that's exactly right.
What we would do.
You don't think this is that forum member that asked about rugby? It's not, is it?
No, I doubt it. Because a forum member would know.
Yeah, because we have a few rugby players already
on performance. Oh yeah, no, for sure.
Okay,
let's go to the next one.
Next one is from War J Fit. Tips for an ectomorph trying to build.
This ectomorph.
Is my one. That's Adam Alley.
Yeah, no, for sure.
That's both of us.
Yeah, it is definitely. And you know, something that I think Sal and I will agree and share on. You know, I'll dive into nutrition a little bit, but I think we talk a lot about nutrition. In fact, he wrote a long question, and he obviously is a smart guy. He's well read. I've seen his Instagram page. Like, he's doing some pretty awesome movements. He's doing a lot of good foundational work in there for sure. Definitely obviously knows his stuff. He's just struggling with the nutrition piece. So we will dive into nutrition a little bit, but I will say, one of the things that probably changed my life was, like Sal, when I went away from the body part split, when I started realizing that, you know what, being an ectomorph and coming in the gym 7 days a week and pounding one muscle, then pounding another muscle the next day, or push pull, I've done it all. I was just burning, and my body was so focused on recovery all the time that I, you know, it got me to a certain point. I definitely made gains. You know, I put a good 15, 20 pounds on over my years of training like that, but I really plateaued hard. When I learned to back off that way, pull down my intensity, stop the failure shit, start training the way like our MAPS anabolic, the foundational program is, and following a structured program that was not focused on intensity, but frequency driven, and learning to focus on that and pull myself away from the gym or tone down the intensity level, I was now not burning as many calories, which made it a lot easier for me to consume more and grow more versus always pounding the body and my body needing so much calories to try and repair and repair. And then bam, I pound again and try and repair and repair, and bam, pound again. And then I was getting in this vicious cycle. So that was a big one for me.
You know, what's interesting is back in the day, you would tell an ectomorph to work out less frequently than a mesomorph, or someone who could build muscle easily. It's funny because the opposite is actually true. Now, of course, there's a limit, right? You can't just work out all the time, but you will benefit from training, like Adam's saying, your muscle groups more frequently. And one of the best ways to do that is to do a full body workout 3 days a week. You're hitting all your muscle groups. You're doing it 3 days a week. You're doing the total volume is the same as you may do with a regular body part split. So instead of doing 21 sets for chest in one workout, you're doing 7 sets each time. You'll respond much faster. I've noticed in all the ectomorphs I've ever trained, it was that frequency that made the biggest impact. It was not intensity. We were trained with the right intensity, but you could push the intensity overboard easily. With that frequency, you can get away with quite a bit.
Well, let me give you an example too on lifting like that.
The compound lifts too, which
this is right where I'm heading. Right where I'm heading around. I'll give you a perfect example. So let's say it was a arm day, because that was a day for me, buys and tries. And, you know, I would start off with your standard, you know, straight bar, bicep curls, and maybe some like dumbbell skull crushers or something. And then I'd go on and do two or three more exercises of for that, you know, and somewhere in there would be cable push downs, maybe some overhead extensions, some things like that. So let's take when I get to my second or third exercise for triceps. I'm now on, let's say, set 15 of total sets that I've done for triceps, and I'm doing tricep pushdowns, and I'm probably doing, I don't know, 100 to 150 pounds. I'm pressing down on these cables. Well, now instead of doing the tricep pushdowns on the cables, and doing 15 sets in one workout, my 15 sets now are spread over three, and then the type of work that I'm doing for my triceps are like weighted dips for my body, close grip bench press, and I'm pushing 185, 225 pounds with a barbell, or, you know, strapping on 45 to 90 pounds around my waist and dipping my body weight. The bang for my buck on those, and I couldn't do that. I couldn't go do weighted dips after close grip tricep and like skull crushers.
No, not if you're doing 20 sets in a workout. Yeah, the first six are the fucking.
Even
the
if you don't, ones. Even if you're doing 12 to 15, yeah, by the time you get through five or eight sets of any exercise. You're
doing finishing exercises
exactly. The rest of the workout is finishing exercises. And that was great for the sarcoplasmic pump, right? So I got the great pump from that because I'm just keep forcing blood into there. But as far as the growth and forcing my body to adapt and grow, it was those big compound movements. And then once I split that up in three workouts, I could go get after it. I could do these big movements, only do five, six sets of it, be done. But then I was adapting and growing more for sure.
Yeah, and 2 days later, you're going to do it again.
So that's lifting. Feeding-wise, best strategy personally for me, and I mean, everyone's different, so I'll let Sal talk on some of his strategies. For me, I started with eat everything in sight, and I would just boom, 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 load, 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 load. But I had a hard time being an ectomorph keeping up, and I'd be stuffed. I'd stuff myself to where, like, literally I was so full, I didn't want to put anything in my mouth. And then it would be 4 hours later before I even thought I wanted to eat again. So actually, for me, was eating really clean, good, nutrient-dense foods first. And then if I was going to pile, like, you know, high saturated fat type foods onto my plan, it was after I got a bulk of my calories early on. So I would, in my case, I need somewhere between 35 to 4,000 calories to maintain, 4,000 to 5,000 calories to grow. So somewhere in that range, I'm getting that extra maybe 500 to 1,000 calories. Then I would allow outside of like me trying to really eat clean, and I would put higher calorie foods, but I wouldn't do that until after I got what my body needed nutritionally. And by nutritionally, I mean like your good clean fats and your protein.
Yeah, you need extra calories. You're going to need extra calories to build. But I'll say this, to be clear, if you don't send the right signal, all those extra calories aren't going to do anything.
That's why I addressed that first. Yeah. I think if you're hitting those big compound movements and you're in a surplus,
right.
Even if it's not a big surplus.
Because I've seen many times ectomorphs go on a bulk and gain fat and not muscle. Yeah. So it's like you can gain weight, you're just not gaining muscle. You're just not sending the right signal.
The other thing that I really got from you was switching my bulking and cutting to shorter periods.
Oh, yeah.
That's another huge one for me that helped me a lot through the competing years, is going to the point where I never let myself bulk for more than 3 to 4 weeks. After I hit that about that 4 week, then I actually intentionally cut. You're not going to lose muscle.
No,
you're going to lean out. You're also going to you're going to restrict the body from calories. You're going to find, and I would cut enough to where I was hungry, you know, and run that for a good 2 to 3 weeks. Because if your ultimate goal is to grow, I don't need to run it quite as long as I'm running my bulk, but I'll do it for at least 2 to 3 weeks afterwards of cutting, and then turn right back around and go to bulking. Watch what you do when you do that.
Lean gains.
Yeah, absolutely.
Our final question is from Raising Autism. He's asking how to become more mobile in the shoulders for doing standing military press with better form.
Well, that's Justin all day long.
Yeah,
you're the shoulder mobility expert.
Yeah, I just actually did a post doing some overhead press today, and I posted a video out on our forum actually showing this this drill that I do, and also do this with like some of the athletes, some of the baseball players, and I thought it's a great mobility drill to do in general too. To, you know, do these arm circles right next to the wall. And so as I'm doing these arm circles, I'm trying not to get away from the wall.
So explain it. Like, what does it look like? You're up against the wall?
So I'm up against the wall and my arm's out in front of me. And so my palm is basically facing away. So the back of my hand is trying to touch the wall.
Gotcha.
Okay. So now I'm sliding it up. And once I get to my sticking point, I'm going to turn my thumb back to the wall. So now my palm is going to face into the wall. So I get that natural rotation.
Oh, so you're going, you're making a wide circle with a straight arm.
Exactly. So I go forwards and backwards with that. And I can actually visibly see, like, when I do that frequently, I can see, like, where I am, you know, in terms of relation to how close I am to the wall, and then also where my sticking point is. So it's a good gauge for me to kind of
measure. Now, is your goal to get closer to the wall and be able to stay?
Exactly. Gotcha. You can pretty much be, like, straight up and down and, like, right next to it. So
would shoulder dislocates be similar, right?
The stick? Okay. Shoulder dislocates, that's the point of those as well, as we're just trying to kind of inch our way in a little bit closer to the body. So now I can get like an even better response out of my rotators.
I do this a similar thing when I walk on the treadmill when I first get the gym, just kind of get warmed up and blood flowing and stuff. So I walk for about 10 minutes. And while I'm walking, I do a little bit of my upper body dynamic and my shoulder. I do that exact those circles like that. And because I'm walking on the treadmill, I'm trying to keep my torso and everything square while I open and rotate all the way around, and it doesn't throw me off walking. So if you try and do that while you're walking on a narrow treadmill, and if you were to torque your body,
because it'll throw you,
it'll throw you off. So it's kind of cool because I'm walking at the same time. So
you don't want your shoulder to come forward as you're doing that.
Exactly. That's the idea, is you keep your torso completely straight, and you're not, you know, cocking to the side or cheating yourself. So I've found it kind of a unique challenge for me to do that, because I don't have the best mobility, but I've been trying to work on that myself. So it's something.
So I mean, that's just literally one thing. Like I have there's a lot of things I do constantly with my shoulders, because that was a focus of mine, because I would always reach a certain pinnacle of my bench, and when I hit that pinnacle of my bench, I would feel this super pressure there in my shoulder, some impingement, something was about to happen. And so I would back off, and then I just would get frustrated because I always wanted to improve and I couldn't get past this point. And then that's when I started picking up Indian clubs, and I started reading about those, and I just fell in love with them, because like I really don't do the type of rotation out of my shoulders that, you know, like I was giving my shoulders credit for. Like I have a lot more range of motion, I just didn't work on it, you know. And so this is something that I decided, you know, to focus on, and wow, what an improvement of overall strength, of stability. I was able to then start, you know, doing the crazier stuff with the kettlebells, and like for a while, it took me a while to adapt to kettlebells. It's a different way to lift weights. And it is.
I'm finally starting to get used to pressing kettlebells overhead.
Yeah. And what really the biggest thing I love about them is that I can get that natural wrist rotation, elbow rotation, you know, all these things. I can get just a little bit more rotation and try and emulate a natural mechanical press out of my arm. And so that way I can sort of distribute the load properly, and it's not this 90 degree locking, you know, stress point where it goes right to the joint. So that's something I learned, and then you know, started to apply. Obviously core strength is a big component to that, like being able to keep posture, maintain composure, keep strong in every single lift, doing it standing up. And then when you go to press, you know, you're going to have that control, and your muscles are going to respond to help you. So
one thing that I do also, I've done in the past, is I'll take a lightweight, do a standing shoulder press, make sure it gets straight up above my head, and then make sure to not shrug my shoulder. So I drop them down.
Right.
Just so I get that scapular movement as I do an overhead press. And I do that with a really lightweight, and then as I get better at it, then I can go to heavyweight, and my presses come up nice and tall.
And
above
it's
my
just
head.
Like you said, like it's going with that cheat code, like really like depressing the shoulder blade down and retracting your shoulder. Yeah. Once you get that down and you have the control where now my scapular retraction, I'm able to squeeze and hold that in position to maintain posture properly. Now I can do a lot more things with my shoulder that I couldn't do.
This is why. So our gym used to not have kettlebells. It does now. I used to do Arnold presses, which simulate a very similar movement as like a military press with your kettlebell. That's why I love the kettlebell press. Hands down, if you got kettlebells, I'm with Justin on that all the way as far as that natural rotation. But if you don't, another possibility is an Arnold press. Arnold presses are great. And focus on a light weight. And because if it's about shoulder mobility, it's not about building your shoulders right now. It's about first getting them mobile. And so when you're focused mobility wise, a lighter weight through full range of motion and controlled, and thinking about the things that Sal and Justin are saying about retracting and depressing your shoulders and keeping yourself in neutral, you know?
I also wanted to mention too, because like alongside that mechanic as far as like the posture is concerned, you know, keeping the shoulder depressed and then retracted. Also when you're pressing, especially with a kettlebell, you want to make sure that everything is in the midline of your body. So I'm actually focused on not letting my arm come too far forward. I'm not, you know, trying to get my elbow out too far. I'm trying to pull everything into the body. So now I'm focused on making a more vertical line as in my rotation going up towards the ceiling. That's another sort of key point, especially why when we're able to focus a little bit more on depressing the shoulder, stabilizing it, it all follows along this line here of rotation. So just trying to keep it within the midline a little bit more.
You know, something I noticed with shoulder mobility is just with myself, as it's gotten better, I can now support more weight at the very top of the lift. I can like hold it there forever now if I wanted to. Whereas before, once I get to the top, it was exhausting trying to hold it up there. I'd have to bring it right back down.
Mm-hmm.
So now I can like rest in the top. As if I get it up there, I can hold it there. And Olympic lifters are, I mean, they lock out a barbell above their head.
Yeah.
And they ain't going anywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's pretty awesome stuff. I will even go as far as to say this. Training, if you're in the gym and you're working out, full range of motion, of course, to a point, but full proper range of motion will build more muscle than short range of motion with heavier weight. So even if you go lighter so that you can get a fuller range of motion, you're going to get better results than if you stick with the shorter range of motion just because it's heavier. Because I know a lot of guys listening right now are saying,
are doing half reps.
Yeah, I don't want to go lighter on my military press. I like to go 90 degrees because I don't have to take the 45s off or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
No, put some quarters or 10s on there. Bring that shit all the way down to your upper chest. Press it all the way up. Get a full range of motion. You'll build more delt. And then you'll work your way up to using that heavy weight.
More core, more central nervous system, more upper back. So much more. Other than just the shoulders. That's the part you got to think about, too. It's not doing full range of motion type movements. So much more works together that way. You're allowing the body to work the way it's supposed to work.
Well, you're prioritizing, too, the part of contraction where you're trying to get your central nervous system to amplify, you know, be the loudest in. And if you're doing half reps, it's gonna focus on, you know, that is the priority of like your range. So what you're doing is immediately causing, you know, a dysfunction, you know, in the muscle as far as like its capacity for range of motion.
I find myself falling in that trap all the time. I'll take I'll be squatting really, really heavy. And then I have to remind myself and I go back off, go lower, pause at the bottom, work on that deep, deep portion of the squat and then come back up. Mm-hmm. And I build muscle every time. My legs get bigger. So before we sign off, hopefully Adam, you're okay with this. I wanted to bring something up. Adam, he wouldn't want to talk about this on air.
Uh-oh, where are we going?
I think we could use the platform of Mind Pump to all of our listeners for some good.
I agree. For sure.
You know, Adam lost somebody very, very close to him recently. Somebody very close to him lost a battle with cancer at a very young age. And unfortunately, as you know, it is sometimes, besides it being very stressful for the family and whatnot, they're all sticking together, you know, and I've seen them stick together. And an amazing family, by the way. Like these things, when these things happen, the massive medical bills build up.
Mm-hmm.
And the family of the gentleman that passed away started a GoFundMe page to help pay for some of these bills. How old was Troy when he passed?
57.
So he's 57 years old.
He was 57, and it was only, I didn't know we were going here. 5 weeks ago now, it's been 5 weeks. He passed just this last Wednesday. So it's been, or Tuesday, excuse me. So it's not even been a week. It was 6 days ago. It's also why you guys heard me talk about I've been kind of in a funk, because we knew it was coming, but we actually only knew 5 weeks ago. So he was diagnosed with stage 4 stomach cancer. And I watched him over the last 4 weeks deteriorate at an extremely fast rate. And it felt like it was overnight to watch him pass. He did pass in his home with all of us. I was there and his family was there. And so it was, but it was anyone that's been through cancer has seen someone go like that, especially when it's rapid and fast like that. It's definitely been rough on them, and it ran up a lot of bills. He had a lot of stuff going on before. So, and because it was so sudden, he was not set up with, I was with him. I'm always with him, but we were, normal could be as, over Christmas break and everything. You would have had no idea. And then, it literally hit us like a train, man.
Yeah. Mm. Well, my condolences, again, to the family. Definitely. And, Doug, would it be okay if we posted, the link to the GoFundMe on our site?
Yeah, let's put it on either mindpumpradio.com or mindpumpmedia. I can get it up immediately on Mindpump Radio.
All right, let's do mindpumpradio.com.
Yeah.
Go on there. There's going to be the link. Click on it, and you can donate whatever you want to help the family. And do this.
If you feel led to it, you know.
If you feel led.
Yeah.
The reason why I didn't want to talk about this is I'm definitely not one to ask for.
I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all understand.
Yeah, we want to help, you know, and that's a great way to help.
Well, here's the deal. Nobody knows, right? The family doesn't know, of course, because you weren't going to do this on my
No, they didn't know.
Do this on GoFundMe just to make them feel good. You can put down who it's from, the donation. Just put MPP, the letter MPP, Mind Pump Posse, so they know. That you know, our listeners are thinking about them, and that Mind Pump is doing some good there. So
love you guys.
Much love, guys. And you can please leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. You can find us on Instagram at Mind Pump Radio. You can find me at Mind Pump Sal. You can find Justin at Mind Pump Justin, and you can find Adam at Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. For more information about this show and to get valuable free resources from Sal, Adam, and Justin, visit us at www.mindpumpradio.com. Until next time, this is Mind Pump.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.